Okay, so today is week four. And week four already. And next week, week five, I will be giving you your essay questions. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi. Hi.
That's our first essay?
That's your only essay.
Ah. Yes.
Yeah. And today we are... Did you want to say something, Catherine?
My name's Catherine.
Come up the front. Come up the front and introduce yourself.
And I work at ACU, some of you I know. I've met before.
I miss your...
Well, I've got flour on me now because I went home in between university and here to do some baking for tomorrow. So if you come tomorrow, I've got baking.
Okay, just follow that way this week.
I help with the administration. Hello, Coralie.
Leave some blanks there. Put your name there.
I'm just here because there are some new students and I need to take your photographs for your student pass, which you'll be receiving tomorrow. But I look forward to seeing
your name.
You
leave a space,
tomorrow.
Put your name there. So today we're starting a new topic, week four, we're starting prose fiction. And some of you might have seen, if you'd looked onto my blog this week, there is the topic. We're looking at Tim Winton. There's Tim Winton and Kate Chopin. This week we turn our attention to prose fiction and the way this offers an expressive and artistic medium from poetry. The two authors... And the way this differs as an expressive and artistic medium from poetry. The big difference, of course, is that poetry is kind of shaped in the middle of the page and prose fiction goes across from one side to the other. It's not shaped in the way that poetry is. Although quite a bit of prose fiction that we will be reading is poetic in the kind of word choices that people make and the descriptions they make. Neil has already spoken to me this morning about remembering Babylon and how the language in there is very dense. So we're looking at Tim Winton, who is the one Australian author we've got in our anthology, prose writer, and we're looking at Kate Chopin. And if you click on these names on the blog here, you'll see that it actually takes you to information about those authors. So that's just to give you an indication of how you can make use of this site. And then there are the blog topics here. We'll come back to those blog topics for this week. But first of all, I want to go to looking at what blogs you've been doing this week, because there's been some fantastic things happening here. I want to go first of all to Neil, and let's have a look at what Neil has written this week. So there's Neil's blog, lovely image at the start, and there's his comment about to all his followers, but I want to look at this poem that he's written here, because this is quite a wonderful personal expression that's come out in the last week. And it's built on what we've learned from the poem Mangoes, the use of repetition, and Song took that up last week also. So repetition really works well to kind of carry and capture our emotions. So let's have a little listen to Neil's poem. Just make that a little bit larger. Hi, Colin. O daughters of mine, O daughters of mine, I'm not there, I know. O daughters of mine, I'd wish never to go. My promise to you has diminished over time. O daughters of mine, my mistakes sing of a sad song. How? Why, you're both too young to understand, O daughters of mine. O daughters of mine, you see I'm off doing time. My love for you will never change even as we age. O daughters of mine, if only I could see you. O daughters, if only, O daughters of mine, if only I was able to wipe your tears, to hold you, to show you, to cuddle you, to take away the fear. O daughters of mine, my broken promise, the pain. O daughters of mine, O daughters of mine, I will not stop until we're together again. O daughters of mine, O daughters of mine, the end will come. O daughters of mine, the pain, the heartaches. O daughters of mine, O daughters of mine. Neil Campbell, 19 Years Inside Out. So I think that's really quite fantastic poem, and I've put a comment on it. I don't know if it's shown up here. No, it's not shown up there yet.
It's underneath the comments underneath the first one.
Underneath here, is it?
Yeah. It's attached to that one.
It's attached to that one.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go and have a look. Neil, that is a wonderful poem that expresses beautifully your sense of loss and pain. You use repetition powerfully to capture this sense of an experience that is really difficult to face, and yet in your poem you face it and come to terms with it. This is what writing can be all about, looking at something painful and then transforming it through the art work itself. Come in, Yvette. So, well done. Do you want to say anything about how that poem came into being and how you felt after writing it?
It's actually a poem that I wrote years and years and years ago.
Okay.
We'll say 20 years ago.
Yep.
And I've spent a lot of time in prison, so I sort of haven't been around for my kids. So.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and unfortunately, through that letting them down all the time.
Yep.
There is no connection.
Now I understand why you're in the literature class, even though when you were here a few weeks ago you said, shock horror, I know nothing about literature, I don't want to go near a computer. And here we're seeing something of your own literary past.
Yeah.
So something that's been feeding. That's fantastic. Brilliant. Thank you so much. Okay, let's have a look at where is it?
It's really something like an elegy, isn't it, almost? Oh,
it
daughters
is.
Of mine.
It is.
Oh, daughters of mine. Yeah,
more closer to an ode than an elegy.
Yeah. Mm. So Josh is not here, so we'll leave Josh for the moment. Mm. Now, Ray, had a look at your stuff here. You need to... You had an interesting comment on Shakespeare's My Mistress' Eyes Are Nothing. You need to work with your learning partner to get them to help you to bring your language clearer, more grammatically. And it would be good to take one of the blog topics this week and actually try and write that from the actual blog topics that are set. Okay? That will give you more focus and might get you a chance to allow your creative juices to flow more.
Oh,
look at those nice pictures.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They come from his website.
This art installation in the Parliament House right now.
Where?
Parliament House.
Parliament House.
For 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Mm. You're doing some wonderful work there.
Did you get my
own? Oh, this one here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes, this is a little poem that I'm a bit embarrassed to share because it's all about me and how good I am.
Yeah.
I think we leave that between you and me. I really thank you for it. It's wonderful.
Oh,
it's wonderful. Okay. So, come back here to the URLs and we've got Ronan. Let's have a look at Ronan's poem. This is a kind of a sequel to the poem you had last week, perhaps, Ronan. You can tell us a bit about it after I read it. Broken Pride. I looked at you a hasty glance, took a gamble, just a chance, then mustered courage to advance, then you approached me for a dance. Self-confidence, you gave me hope, my inner child swings on a rope. Let's run away right now, elope. Please don't ever leave, can't cope. The dance is over, you've moved on. It's my good friend you've set upon. It wasn't really me you want, it's not the place that I belong. Broken pride, shattered dreams, but the night goes on it seems. There are no sides nor any teams, just sorrow expressed in this scene.
Mm.
Beautiful. So the comment I made here, Ronan, this poem really moves in terms of its energy, in terms of its actual movement. You're working within a traditional form with rhyme, but this really works in this poem. Capture the immediacy of the event you're describing. Well done. Just one comment. Now, sometimes at the end of your blogs, I will correct things, but I'm not correcting everything. And in a way, it's good if you can get your learning partners to work on your entries and help you correct your English. I had to look this one up, Ronan, this question of there no sides. In your poem, the second last line, there no sides nor any teams. It's actually, there are no sides. And I actually had to do a little grammatical search there. There are doesn't have any grammatical contraction. In English, it doesn't. They put there, T-H-E-R-E, and then an apostrophe and another R-E, but that's very unusual. But they, with apostrophe R-E, actually means they are, which is not what you meant in the poem. So thanks for that. That's really good. Okay, who have we got next here? So next we've got Adelaide, but no. I haven't got anything from Adelaide this week.
I put
week.
It on just recently. Okay. Just this afternoon.
Yep. And then we've got Rima. Now, Rima's is very interesting.
Mm.
Rima's is really interesting.
Well, Rima.
But it's interesting because it leads me to make some observations about how your English can be improved by making it simpler. Obviously, you've got quite a sophisticated language capacity working with your learning partner. One of the most famous authors in English, G.K. Chesterton, said, it is really hard but so important to write simply, to bring it down simply. Mm. Complication is not necessarily good. So, you know, it's an art to kind of get your meaning out, simple sentences, simple words. So anyway, let's have a little read of it, see what others think. I mean, there are some beautiful things in it. It's certainly got some great uses of language. Some of the sentences are very long and kind of heavy and difficult to kind of understand exactly what's being said. So this is a comment on The Road Not Taken. I like this poem because of its beautifully expressed allegory of human choice. Referencing a central metaphor in Christianity, wide is the path that leads to destruction, but narrow and straight is the path to salvation, the poet communicates his own choice and the reason behind it with few but picturesque descriptions of both paths available to humanity. The message of the first road leading to destruction is conveyed by images such as bent and undergrowth, which allude to the devious nature of the wide way of sense indulgence at the cost of the living spirit and its inevitable end in the undergrowth, a word sounding not unlike underworld, a state where spiritual growth is checked by the overgrowth of worldly desires. Notice you've got one paragraph and it's one sentence. So long, very difficult to kind of follow all that for the reader. Shorter sentences are easier to manage. Get your ideas into shorter sentences. Come in, please. That's fine.
But it's really interesting.
It is interesting. It is really interesting. Describing the path of his choice as grassy, on the other hand, the poet evokes a clear image of life, and the fact that this path wanted wear provides the reader with a parallel to the final part of the Christ's message, which continues, and few are those who choose the narrow path that leads to life. At the outset, the poet reveals his disappointment at not being able to travel both paths as he sees attraction in both. He then consoles himself by reasoning that he kept the first for another day. But returning from reasoning to intuition and being on the narrow path already, he reminds himself by admitting, I doubted if I should ever come back. This line and the last stanza tie neatly with the general mystic belief that a soul swings repeatedly and helplessly between birth and death, till awakened at last from the dream of existence, he launches consciously on the more rugged and disciplined path with its narrow margin for mind-wandering carnal desires in exchange for life everlasting. Can you put in simple words what you meant with all that?
Yeah.
Can you? Can you put into simple words what
the last
you...
last paragraph.
Yeah, the last paragraph. If you were explaining to somebody...
birth or death for a soul.
Yeah.
So what happens as death, it's the body that...
dies.
Dies.
Yeah.
So the soul is always there.
Yeah.
And it just changes the body...
in its different form.
In different form.
Yep. Okay, well that's a little more simple to follow than what's written here.
Mm.
So what I have Okay, let's just read the last paragraph. Realizing himself as immortal and being in union with the messianic spirit and voice, he predicts his divine and chosen incarnations in order to carry forward the time-old truth about the two divergent roads lying ahead of human beings, choosing one of which has made all the difference between life and death. I mean, it's a very sophisticated answer. You've given a very kind of complex philosophical view of what the two roads mean. How it could be improved is, I think maybe your comment is on here. Let's see, my comment is on here.
But I'm not sure I got the full meaning of that.
No, that's right. So the comment is not here yet, but here is the comment that I made. Rima. So let's go here. So this is the comment that I made on your work, and if you go into your blog, if you click on comments, you will see it. And you can approve the comment if you like the comment. If you don't approve it, you can trash it. It's up to you what comments you want on your blog to appear. Now, Neil's comment appeared there because he liked the comment, so you can leave it. But this is what I said. This is a remarkable entry that shows a really sophisticated ability to use the English language. Well done. However, the language is almost too much for this occasion, and you need to be careful not to allow yourself to be carried away by your own verbal power. In your second last paragraph in particular, the one beginning, "Moreover," I feel that your huge sentence takes the reader away from the central point you are trying to make. The famous author G.K. Chesterton is well known for his saying, "It takes genius to write simply." I try to teach this idea to all my students. One important part of writing simply is to use shorter sentences.
What if you've got something long to say?
Make it into several shorter sentences.
Compress it. Still use them words, but don't put four of them words in there. Try using two of them words and then use the other two in the next sentence.
So instead of comma, I use full stop.
I think so. I think that helps.
Less is more.
Less is more. That's it. Less is more. Very good. And I think that... Oh, no, there's song. We've got song yet. Let's listen to the second song from Song. He had a beautiful one last week. Let's listen this week. Now, Song is someone who claims that he doesn't have English capacity and claims he has a real problem with expression, and yet we've had a wonderful poem last week, and this week this poem is also pretty wonderful. I mean, you know, we can go through and try and correct some of the grammar, but the wonderful thing about poetry is that you get away with things grammatically in poetry. Let's just read this poem here. It's called Art. "You have been naively growing up in me, who dare attempts to come out as unripe fruit. You are pushing extremely hard to come out, though I am intolerable to let you be out naked. You should patiently give me more time for me to dress you up, because the outside is abruptly cold and wild to you. In fact, I have been longing to see you in dress ever since I've met you. I'm eagerly carving your clothes that might be fit on your shape. Sigh, when I would be ready to present you to the shiny, when I would be ready to present to you the shiny, beautiful clothes." Okay. So that, to me, that conveys a certain kind of anticipation and expectation of creating something. It's like almost, this poem is like about the birth of a poem, or the birth, what you talk, the title is Art, isn't it?
Yes,
that's the title. The title is Art. Art is waiting to come out. Tell us a little bit about how this poem came into your mind. Can you do that? Can you try and tell us a little bit about how you got this inspiration?
Apart from this class, I participate art class.
Yep.
That I never draw paintings before. and I drew about three pictures in painting. Then I started taste of the color difference.
Yes.
And it gives me something like I wanted to put little more and I want to get into deeper more.
Yeah.
But yet I cannot figure out which color should be.
Yeah.
So that kind of a struggle has got into that writing.
Right, yes. Okay. So this kind of satisfied something there that hadn't really been expressed in the painting yet.
Yes. So it's yours.
Beautiful.
It's yours?
Yes, this one.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
You can see this.
Wow.
That's this is a real good piece.
That's brilliant.
It's all people in that place.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Mm. Very good.
So, Colin, you didn't have anything yet, did you? Do I have your blog address?
Yeah, I just put it in this week.
You just put it in this week. Okay, well, next week we'll have one of your poems to look at.
Okay.
All right? Or prose passages.
Precious on the
horn. Fallen behind.
So in our booklet, if we turn to page, now you've all got your page numbers written into your book. If you turn to page 31, there's a section in there called prose. That's what it looks like. A section called prose.
Just count to two. Just go 2, 4, 6, 8. Like that's
easier. Thank you, Sol. Would I just have a quick pause? Oh, that's all right. Don't worry. When Sol has finished, we'll pass it over to me. It's quite all right. Don't worry about it.
Just remember that part. 2, 4, 6, 8, 2, 3, 4.
Can I just
see?
Yeah. And
shall I let you see
later?
Later.
Yeah, later. It's good.
Later.
So on page 31, there's a brief explanation of prose. It's good for you to read this page. I've just taken out these key points here, and I want to just elaborate a little bit on them. When we talk about prose, of course prose is also using language like poetry. But in poetry we're talking about stanzas, we're talking about verses, we're talking about sound patterning. Yes, Colin?
What does the word mean?
Protagonist?
No, prose.
Oh, right, that's exactly what I'm trying to explain.
So
prose is... prose applied broadly is all writing that you find in the newspaper, in history books, in geography books, in fiction. Prose is basically the act of human writing. Poetry is a very specialized genre of writing where poetry is shaped on the page and turned into stanzas. Drama is another very specialized form of writing where characters get onto a stage and they speak their lines one to another. Drama is language that's coming alive, it's being embodied on a stage. So prose is all the writing you read in the newspaper, it's all prose. And prose can be used as a sort of a criticism. You say somebody's writing is prosaic, means it's very, very ordinary. It's not poetic. So that's what prose means.
So generic.
Yeah. But prose fiction is using language, not in a poetic form, but using language in a way that brings emotions and feelings and situations to life. And in prose, you always have these...
Non-fiction is not prose, is that true?
Non-fiction is prose.
Or prose. Fiction, sorry.
Fiction is prose and non-fiction is prose.
Yeah, that's prose there. That's how that's written, that's prose. Yeah.
And fictional prose has a protagonist. That's a person who's demanding something. The protagonist is the actor in the story, okay, the main actor. The setting is where it takes place. The first story we're going to read by Tim Winton takes place on a beach. The setting is sand. The story is actually called Sand. The story or the plot is what actually happens in the story. Who the characters are, where they're going, what they're doing, what the outcome is of their events.
You only find the plot by reading it.
And you only get it by reading it, that's right. Conflict, you get tensions between the characters. That's what makes stories interesting. That's why people want to read a novel to the end, because it's got conflict in it.
You can have, instead of conflict, you can also have love and all those other kind of emotions.
All those other emotions, that's right, absolutely. The point of view. Now, I was talking with Neil just before the class started, and we were talking about Remembering Babylon. Some stories begin, I did this, I did that. Other stories begin, he did this, they did that, she did this. I is first person. He, they, or she is third person. So sometimes stories start in the first person. Sometimes they start in the third person. Of course, they can vary. Yep.
That's a template for what to write a poem or story.
Like a fiction book or a non-fiction book.
This is a list of things that you will find in a prose story.
This is a model to go by.
Not really a model to go by.
Idea of what's in it.
That's not really a model to go by, but more like a list of the engine parts. If we're talking about a mechanic, he lists all the engine parts. You wouldn't put an engine together just by looking at the parts. You'd need a manual how to put it all together, and there are manuals how to write stories, but this is not a manual. Techniques. Well, of course, prose uses language just like poetry, and there are all sorts of techniques. Literary style, comparison, contrast, symbolism, figurative language, similes and metaphors and so on. Now what I'm going to do now is I'm going to read a story to you. So sit back, make yourself comfortable, and listen to this story by Tim Winton called Sand. It's an amazing story. And yes, please, Rosanna, what?
I was just wondering whether you're going to drink at some point.
Going to drink? Oh, lovely. Thank you, Rosanna. It's in this. It's the last story in the book. The last story in the book. This book that you've got in your hand. There it is. The book that you've got in your hand, the very last story, is called Sand.
There it is.
You got it? It's on page
167, it says on it.
It is 167, or it's page 63 if you've written your numbers in.
This is a chapter out of his book?
No, it's not a chapter. It's a complete story. It's one story in a number of stories in a book.
Oh, yeah. It starts at 165.
It starts at 163.
163.
It's got a picture of... There it is, that one.
There it is, yeah.
This is Tim Winton. Sorry? He's in Western Australia.
Western Australia.
Western Australia, he's a surfer. These are the questions that you've got to use on this story for your blog this week. Write a paragraph that is in the style of Tim Winton. That is the opening paragraph of a story about an aspect of your own experience. So if you want to be creative and you want to try and write like Tim Winton, and there it is. Now these topics are in your, you'll see them up on my blog site. You don't need to copy them down, they're there. The second question, name the characters in the story and say how they are different. Now that's a question I'm going to ask you all to think about when the story finishes. I'll get you to think about it and write an answer down to that. And then the third question, what is this story Sand essentially about? Because is it just a throwaway story about some kids on the beach, or is there something more to this story? Now, how are we going to find out what's more to this story?
By listening to it.
Exactly, Colin. You've got it. It's not only listening to the narrative, like the storyline, but it's listening to the very words he uses and the kind of feeling that he's getting, wanting us to have about these events. That's what it is. So let's read the story. Here we go. Frank and his older brother, Max, walked behind the men along the white beach at sunset. Very vivid, describes exactly where they are. Two brothers walking behind men along the white beach and it's sunset. They walked for ages. The sun boiled in the sea and the bare dunes turned pink. Notice the descriptions there. Sun boiled in the sea. Setting, the bare dunes turned pink. tackle jingled and pattered on the rods over the men's shoulders. So the men are all obviously going off fishing. You hear the tackle. Frank, he's the younger brother, listened to the rhythmic clink of the lantern glass and fell into step with it, singing under his breath, "Hot cross buns, hot cross buns, one a penny, two a penny." Oh, no, not that bit. Veins stood out in his father's legs. The men's footprints were deep. They were like mouths with tongues of shadow hanging out of them. One a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns. Notice the description of the steps of the men's in the sand. They were like mouths with tongues of shadow hanging out of them. I wonder what impression he's trying to create there.
Excuse me, Michael. It says that they're walking behind men.
Yep.
And now it says that one of them's his father.
His father and son, that's what I mean. One's masculine, the other one's tinkle, tinkle, hot cross buns, the other's deep and veins.
So one of the men in the front is his father. There's a group of men in front. They're all fishermen with their tackle hanging over their shoulders, but one of them is the father. Does that make sense, Neil?
Yeah, it does now, yeah.
The men's footprints were deep. They were like mouths with tongues of shadow hanging out of them. One a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns. It wasn't Easter, but Frank couldn't get the song out of his head. Now and then, Max darted ahead to walk amongst their father's mates. He said things that made them laugh. He was 10 already and could make men laugh. He didn't miss their mother. Frank knew he should shut up about her. It was only 2 weeks. So we're getting a little hint of here of something that's happened 2 weeks ago that's not talked about specifically. Something's happened to their mother.
Yes.
Top of page 164. You might have to go back the other way, Neil.
Yeah, no, because it says here the turning on top of it. It's backwards, it goes up. It says the turning on top of it, not the sand. The turning's the name of the book.
The turning is the name of the book, and sand is the name of the story in the book.
Right, okay.
Okay, got 164 there.
Yeah, I got it.
Now and then Max darted ahead to walk amongst their father's mates. He said things that made them laugh. He was 10 already and could make men laugh. He didn't miss their mother. Frank knew he should shut up about her. It was only 2 weeks. When they finally came to the rocks, the men shoved pipes into the sand to stand their rods in, and their father lit the gas lamp. The sun was gone, but the sky was still light. It swirled yellow and green and blue like a bruise. When the tackle boxes opened, he smelt whale oil and muleys. Frank watched his father tie on a gang of hooks whose curves flashed in the lamplight. Around them, the others muttered and smoked. They were just like ladies knitting, like his mother's friends. Max was down at the water's edge, skimming shells out across the tops of waves that spilt across the shelf of reef. Now that he was used to him, Frank loved his father. It took a few days every summer to like the sweet and sour smell of him again, to understand the dark cracks in his palms and the way he squinted behind the smoke of his fag. Frank watched him pick up a half-frozen muley and stitch it up the hooks. Max came up and threw himself down on the sand between them. "Now you boys behave yourselves," he said, getting up off his haunches. "When the tide drops, you can come out onto the reef with us, all right?" "Can we play in the sandhills?" Max asked. "Yeah, but don't go far. We might need someone to run the gaff out for us." The other two men were wading out across the reef, the bait swinging in the last of the light. And before their father could join them, they were casting into the gloom. For a while, Frank knelt in the warm sand to watch. You could see their heads and the curves of their rods against the sky. They were laughing. Moths came out of the dark to butt against the hot white glass of the lantern. Max picked up the pack of matches that lay on the tackle box. "Let's go up the hills," he said, slipping the matches into the pockets of his shorts. "All right." They walked over to the steep foredune and clawed up it and on the other side the sandhills rolled on and on forever. Frank jogged behind his brother down into long gullies, and for long stretches the sand was firm underfoot. All the way, Frank heard the matches rattle in Max's shorts. He breathed in time. He began to sing, "One a penny, two a penny. Shut that up! Sorry!" They ran until a wall of sand loomed, and they kept at it until the slope made Frank feel they were running on the spot. In the end, they clambered to the crest and straddled the knife edge of the dune so sand ran down the inside of their legs and spilt from the tips of their toes. If you listened hard enough, you could hear the sand hiss as it slipped away. Max pulled out the matches and shook the box until it sounded like a rattler on a cowboy show. "What you gonna do?" said Frank wearily. You had to be careful with Max. He had side teeth like a dog and a way of looking at you that you could feel in the dark. "You don't know what a blue flame is, do you?" "A what?" "Watch this." A match flared between them and Max lifted his legs and farted. Nothing happened until the flame scorched Max's fingers and he dropped it and left them in darkness. "That was it?" "No, stupid." Frank looked seaward. He couldn't see the beach or the grown-ups, but the glow of the lamp was visible. We're now on page 166. Max lit up again, but nothing happened. "Here," he said, chucking the matches. "Help me. Light one and hold it close." "Close? To me bum, stupid." When after several tries, Frank got the match lit, he saw that Max had slid his shorts off and was arched back with his bum off the sand. "Come on, hurry up!" Frank leant in and found himself peering at the dark squint of Max's bum hole. He began to tremble with pent-up laughter. "Closer, stupid!" Frank took the flame right in, but he wasn't very steady. He had the giggles now, and something fizzed, and Max recoiled with a howl. "You bastard!" Frank lurched to his feet. Max lunged at him, and Frank spun away down the incline while his brother grabbed at his shorts. Frank could hear himself laughing as he went. Max was stronger, and he could punch fast, but Frank knew he could always outrun him. He spilled down into the hollow and found hard, flat sand as Max came roaring. The more he weaved and feinted, the madder Max got. It was always like this, with him giggling nervously and Max bellowing behind. Frank knew how much Max hated him being faster. He could really duck and dart. At school lunchtimes, the big boys always picked him for their footy team, and they didn't care what Max said. Their mother called him Rabbit, and she didn't care what Max said. But the more he thought of Max behind him, boiling and spitting as he was now, the heavier Frank felt. He knew he could outrun him, but the idea of Max got to his legs. The fear seeped into him and bogged him down until he just gave up and fell to his knees and waited for the flogging he knew would come. But when Max caught up, he just sprawled out, panting. "I didn't mean it," said Frank. "It was an accident." His brother rolled over. A fat red moon emerged from behind the highest, farthest dune. Frank felt sand in his shorts. His undies sagged, full and bulky with it, the way they were the day he pooped his pants at school. He remembered the way he had to wide-leg it to the toilets, with all the kids laughing, and how he locked himself inside to wait for his mother, how Max came in and said he'd kill him if he didn't stop bawling and clean himself up. "You're adopted," he said. "They found you on the tip in a kennel." The day went on forever and their mother never came. "Max, I didn't know how to do it." "Ah, shut up," said his brother. "It was an accident." "All right, it was an accident. Let's dig." "Dig what?" said Frank carefully. He was surprised at how fast Max was forgiving him and a little uneasy at how suddenly the moon had appeared. "A hole, dickhead. A tunnel, like in the movies. An escape tunnel. We can come back to it. Hide stuff." "Okay," said Frank, picturing it. "Over here," said Max. "This bit's kind of wet and hard." In the strange light of the moon, they dug into the side of the bare white hill, just bored right in like dogs. They didn't speak. Frank was spurred on by the intensity of Mac's work. He dragged away what Mac scooped back between his legs. And after a while, all you could see was Max's feet sticking out of the side of the dune. 168. Funny, said Max, wriggling his way back out. It's quiet in there. You can't hear anything. Can I try? Nah, you're too small. Oh, Max, please. I don't know. All right, just a quick go. We got to go deeper. Frank wasted no time in case Max changed his mind. He wormed his way into the dark hole and was interested at how warm it was inside. There was an odd mineral smell, but no sound, only his breathing. He lay there with his hand outstretched to touch the curved wall. Then he heard a hiss behind him. A bit of dry sand spilled against his feet from outside. There was a squeak and then more squeaks. It was Max walking around out there. He was climbing up the dune. No, he was stomping on it. Frank felt a thud overhead. Max! Frank got up on his elbows. There was another thud. A warm clod hit him in the back of the neck. Something fell in the dark ahead, and a gust of air rose against his face. He scrambled backwards and was halfway out when it all came down on his head with a woof and pinned him flat like the weight of a whole team piling in, going stacks on the mill. All his breath rushed out and sand pressed warm into his eyes and ears and rammed against his tight-shut lips. Then his legs began to twitch. They flailed as though they didn't even belong to him. They writhed and churned in loose sand. His feet were free. His knees dug in so that his whole body could twist. Then he got an arm free and pushed up hard. The great heavy crust parted around his neck and he was out on his feet, running blind and gulping in sobs of air and choking grit until he fell coughing, crying, alone on the sand. Frank bawled until his eyes washed clear enough to see the blurry moon. He saw the dunes all around him holding up the edges of the sky. Everything was white and woolly. Even his feet and arms were ghostly. He got up and ran. His feet chuffed in powdery sand. He was the only sound in the world. He reached a crest and saw the dark plain of the sea flecked with moonlight. His chest hurt. It felt like he'd swallowed the earth, but he didn't stop running. When he saw the lantern, he spilled down onto the beach, holding everything in. The men stood in the light with their rods, and in their midst, Max stood with a mulloway across his back, silver as a prince's cape, glistening from arm to arm, still wet and trembling. Their father turned with the gaff in his hand. The smile left his face. Frank wide-legged it towards them, apologizing all the way.
Fish.
Kind of a fish. So tell us something of your reactions to the story. What sort of thoughts or feelings did you...
Very Australian.
Tell us why it's Australian, Neil.
Very.
No, just the terminologies and slang that's used within
the
words that typically describe, you know, Aussie slang.
That's right.
Are used in there, and expressions are... the expressions are Australian. You couldn't...
Yes.
You couldn't say that it was an American one. You couldn't. You possibly could if we're in America, but we're not. We're Australian. It's an Australian author, so that also could be
that's
fact
right.
That he's talking about Australia.
It's uninhibited language, isn't it? Uninhibited language just says it as it is, and that kind of takes us very raw, but because of that, it takes us into the immediacy of their feelings and the experience, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Nothing holds back. Beautiful.
It is a very raw experience. And especially for that young man, that young boy.
Very much so.
And very Australian. Their sense of humour.
I love it.
Especially Niall.
They build up with a lot of sensations.
It's so coarse.
Sorry, what's that?
Building up, there's a lot of sensations.
Raw.
A
lot of self-sensation. Very good.
You get into that one trauma.
Build up. of sensations.
Yes.
Now you could actually go through, that's a beautiful comment, sensations, all the physicality, the heat, the grit,
the descriptions. Well written to read.
Yeah, that's right. Build up of sensations, powerful descriptions. Yep. Any other comments? Any other thoughts?
The context, like you could almost taste salt on your lips.
You could. Context, vivid. Almost taste salt, yeah. Good.
I suppose we've all been there and done that.
We've all done something similar, yeah, beautiful. Colin, any thoughts? Nothing? Okay. Yvette, any thoughts?
Crude.
Okay. So it grated against your sense of what was acceptable, did it, perhaps? Or
I don't have hang-ups about anyone
lying
apart from
myself. Yeah. See, only in Australia you get this conversation.
That's right. Yep, okay, good. Ronan?
The other thing that I noticed was obviously the repetition of my
1-2. Repetitions, yep. So what was that repetition doing?
It's giving you a rhythm for the way to read the page.
Rhythm of activity and music to the page.
Yeah. And if you read it with those beats, like sort of
Yep, lovely.
Like a pacing to read.
Ray, do you have a thought on it?
That sounds like a true story.
A true story. Yeah. So okay, so that's a very interesting comment, because what is the truth of this story? What is the truth of this story, Ray? Any thoughts?
It's just everyday life.
Is it just everyday life? Is it just everyday? So what don't we know about we know what's happening between the two brothers, we know what's happening to the father. Are there elements of the wider context?
To me, it's part of...
I think that their father was really never around here, and he came back for summer because he was obviously off work, and their mother's passed away, so
it's mentioned
they were very uneasy with their father at first, but one of the boys found it easier to sort of accept him being there and his mother not.
Hang on a second, Coralie. It's just to build on what Neil said, that's really interesting, because you're showing... There's a whole kind of psychological background to this story.
Yeah. But we don't know if the mother's passed away or she's just taken off.
That's right. We don't know for sure.
At the moment as well, it's a story that will be recounted for years and years to come. Remember the time he got almost buried in the bush.
That's right. Yeah. Very good. Coralie?
But he does think of his mother. To me, it's a moment or a little experience of incredible insensitivity.
On whose part?
The man.
Max's.
The power. The older brothers against this child, whatever it is that's happening to him. Shut up! Even those two little words, shut up, is so damaging to that child. So damaging. I could hardly listen to it.
So you're really answering the second question here. Name the characters in the story and say how they're different from each other. So you feel that the younger brother is vulnerable?
Vulnerable, yep. Absolute vulnerability.
Yep, okay.
And it's so sensitively written.
Yep.
The searching, the power of the men, and this one little boy.
Yep.
But it's very powerful.
It is. Now, where does the power come from?
The word.
The words, Colin, beautiful.
The words.
Did you notice something about the words were shaped and...
There are no speech bubbles.
That's a very important observation. There are no speech bubbles. There are no inverted commas. Like normally, when you have speech, you have inverted commas like that. But Tim Winton doesn't use that. He kind of assumes that the reader will know who's speaking and who's not speaking. So that's one aspect of the language, but the other aspect of the language is, well, we've already talked about the descriptions, but if you look closely at at the way, you know, even in the last paragraph, when he saw the lantern, he spilled down onto the beach holding everything. The men stood in the light with their rods, and in their midst Max stood with a mulloway across his back, silver as a prince's cape, glistening from arm to arm, still wet and trembling. Tim Winton, go on, Colin.
Very visual description.
It's a very visual description, and not only is it visual, but it also tells us something about Max and his relationship to his brother. Max is there with the adults now. Max's kind of pride, he's the prince.
He's always looking up.
He's always, yeah, something he's in kind of control. And Frank kind of hangs back as the youngest sibling in that situation. Adelaide, any comments yourself?
I don't like Tim Winton.
You don't like Tim Winton? Tell us why you don't like him.
I just don't like him.
That's not good enough. You have to give a few reasons at least.
Please.
He's a
Yoba,
but his best friend's name is Robbo.
I don't know. I just what a little bit I've read his stuff, and then I seen some show on the ABC. It doesn't interest me.
It's a lovely comment. We're all different, man.
All different. We're all different. We are. We're all different. Look. We're going to have a break now because it's 4 minutes to 4 and I can smell the coffee brewing outside.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, come back, and we're going to have a look at another story, a different story. I'm going to take a photograph of this and put this up onto your blog so you can see it. When you answer some of these questions, you might want to look at some of this. But this first question might interest some of you to write a paragraph in the style of Tim Winton. That's the opening paragraph of a story about your own experience. You might like to try something creative. These two topics are like critical. They're analyses and analytical. And this one's an opportunity to be creative. Many people say the best way to learn how to be a creative artist is to imitate poets or story writers. Imitate them and then gradually find your own language.
I actually have something that I'm actually going to say to you.
Go, please.
Because it was actually on these documentaries last night.
Yeah.
Every form of art.
Yeah.
Every form of art is imitation.
Yeah. Very good. That's
Shakespeare. Yeah. Romeo and Juliet. Arthur read the book Romeo and Juliet.
That's right. That's
right. He wrote his own version of it.
That's it.
But he was inspired by that.
Yeah. That's right.
Van Gogh cut his ears off.
That's right.
He used to have sculptures, but he went to the old church grounds and found an old thing that had already been carved. He used that as that. So back in those days, imitation was the prime form of you've made it.
Of learning, that's right. That's
You're accepted as one of the elite.
That's right.
If you could imitate the person before you.
That's right. Very good. Good things you've watched there. That's fantastic.
There are no new ideas.
There are nothing new under the sun.
You were there when we watched that.
Yep.
Okay, let's have a break for 10 minutes, folks.
Don't forget, I need to take photos.
Photos.